you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, good friends. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod. Well, it turned out to be a pretty busy Memorial Day weekend, with the White House and House Republicans finally agreeing on a plan to avoid fiscal chaos by raising the debt ceiling and putting the brakes on some new spending. Now, the big challenge is getting that plan through Congress. But that begs the question, why do we have to go through this political circus over raising the debt ceiling, and why only when a Democrat is in the White House? And that is just one of the big issues keeping Congressman Adam Schiff busy these days. He's also a leader of successful Democratic efforts to expose those Republican claims about so-called weaponization of federal agencies as totally phony, thereby causing great embarrassment to Jim Jordan, which is good. He's also fighting efforts in many red states to roll back voting rights while leading the charge in Washington to get the Supreme Court to adopt a strict code of ethics. And, by the way, Adam Schiff is also busy running to be the next United States Senator from California. We caught up with Congressman Schiff just before the Memorial Day weekend break and just before the debt ceiling agreement between Kevin McCarthy and President Biden. Congressman Schiff, good to reconnect with you, and welcome back to the Bill Press Pod.
It is great to be with you. We've known each other a long time, and I was working on the program.
Well, we've known each other a long time, fought many good battles together, and more battles to come.
Absolutely.
You know, as we talked, you know, we're in the middle of this whole crisis about the debt, manufactured maybe crisis about the debt. So, I mean, we don't know how things are going to play out. And before everything plays out, I just want to ask you one question, Congressman. Do we have to go through this every year, or at least every year when a Democratic president is in the White House?
We shouldn't, no. I mean, this is an artificial limitation Congress has imposed on itself. And frankly, I think we ought to get rid of it because it's only used for brinksmanship. It ends up resulting in our debt being downgraded because of the level of dysfunction in the GOP that sees this as an opportunity to hold the whole country's economy hostage to try to impose draconian cuts that they don't have the votes for. So it doesn't have to be this way. And frankly, we should make sure in the future this doesn't happen again.
I think the Constitution is pretty clear, right, that we have to pay our bills.
Absolutely. The 14th Amendment says that the debt of the United States shall not be subject to question. So we ought to make sure that it's not.
Yeah. So meantime, Congressman, you must walk around feeling like you have a target on your back. So the latest is, you know, not only did Speaker McCarthy exercise his first act by throwing you off the Intelligence Committee, but now one of your colleagues is demanding that you be expelled from Congress because she says that the Durham report proves that the whole Russian investigation was a big hoax, and you're the one responsible for it. You ready to hang up your spurs and move back to California?
You know, this is classic of these extreme MAGA people who not only don't know their facts, but are willing to engage in such frivolous and destructive behavior. If they knew anything about it, they would know that Durham was appointed by Bill Barr at Donald Trump's urging, basically to expose what Trump was promising, some deep state conspiracy theory in which Nancy Pelosi and John Brennan and Joe Biden would be implicated and go to jail. Of course, none of that happened. The Durham investigation was a huge bust. He brought two cases to trial and lost both of them.
Right.
And after 4 years and 400 and something interviews, really had nothing to show. And I think out of sort of despair at this failed investigation, they're trying to resurrect the morale of the right wing by going after me. And of course, they've conveniently forgotten that the Russia investigation in the House was begun by a Republican when Devin Nunes was chairing the Intel Committee. But again, facts don't seem to matter much to that crowd.
And the Durham report, in fact, does not prove that the Russian investigation was a total hoax, right? I mean, there might have been some misstep by the FBI at one point, but the Russians were really involved in trying to influence the 2016 election. The Mueller report proved that, and now the Durham report, in effect, confirms it, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. What they would like to conveniently gloss over is the fact the Russians were actively intervening in our election to elect Donald Trump. And the Trump campaign was helping. The Trump campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was giving Russian intelligence internal campaign polling data, giving Russian intelligence their battleground strategy in different battleground states. And that same unit of Russian intelligence was doing a hacking and dumping operation where they're hacking Clinton and DNC emails and dumping them through cutouts. They had a whole social media campaign out of St. Petersburg to elect Trump. And so there were good reasons to investigate Russia's interference in our election because they were interfering in our election.
Right.
And there were good reasons to investigate Trump's connections to Russia, including, by the way, his efforts to consummate the biggest real estate deal of his life, a Moscow Trump Tower, during his presidential campaign.
So, Congressman, once the Republicans got control of the House, they said, all right, we're going to respond to all of these efforts to investigate Donald Trump by we're going to expose what they call the weaponization of federal agencies, including the FBI, including the Department of Justice. Jim Jordan in charge of that as chair of the Judiciary Committee. How's that working out for them, Congressman? Okay.
No better than it did for John Durham. It's been a big bust. The couple people they called in that were supposed whistleblowers didn't have anything to say along the lines that they were hyped for, and really they've got nothing to show for it. In the Judiciary Committee, this is a slightly different matter, but Jim Jordan scheduled a field hearing up in New York to try to interfere in Alvin Bragg's prosecution of Donald Trump. And that was a fiasco. It was made clear to the Republicans before they took their show on the road that this would really hurt them in court because they were being sued by Alvin Bragg to prevent them from interfering in the prosecution. And so the Republicans, who were told undoubtedly by their own lawyers, "You're hurting our own case," were instructed during this hearing in New York not to mention Trump's name. But of course, the whole point of being in New York was to interfere with the prosecution of Donald Trump. And so I have to admit to having a little fun during that field hearing by suggesting that are we to believe that the Republicans just coincidentally, of all the states in the union, picked New York to have a hearing, and of all the cities in New York, picked Manhattan? New York and of all the boroughs in the city picked Manhattan. I mean, it was just absurd.
Well, it's pretty clear, Congressman, that they do not seem to have done their homework in hearing after hearing by calling witnesses who don't say what they're supposed to say or what they thought they would say. But it's also pretty clear that you and other Democrats are pretty well organized, right, to take them on and to expose their incompetence almost.
We are. And, to give you one recent illustration in the Judiciary Committee, they have had a bill basically attacking Democrats over defunding the police. Their mantra, defunding the police. That is the Republican mantra, because those are the ones who seem to be using it the most. And I offered an amendment to their bill, which criticized efforts to defund the police. I offered an amendment which would put the committee on record, therefore opposing Matt Gaetz, bill to defund the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And I sort of went down the line. I said, how about it, Chairman Jordan? Are you willing to speak out against Matt Gaetz's bill to defund the entire federal law enforcement agency known as the ATF?
Mr. Jordan, would you like to me to yield? Do you express your support for Mr. Gaetz's legislation
I'm going to yield to Mr. Gaetz.
No, I'm yielding to you, Mr. Jordan.
Well, I'm going to listen to Mr. Gaetz's compelling arguments that I know will be coming,
Jordan,
and then we will
have a
debate. Mr. Jordan,
reclaiming my time, I'd be happy to yield to you for the purpose
of yes. I appreciate your willingness.
Mr. Jordan, if you'll let me finish.
I will.
It would eliminate the Bureau immediately after enactment. Do you support that, Mr. Jordan? Yes or no?
I've given my answer.
Do you support it?
I've given my answer.
Yes or no, Mr. Jordan?
I've given my answer, Mr. Schiff.
Okay, I guess your answer is you don't support it or you're afraid to say that you do. But I'm happy to yield to Mr. Johnson or Mr. Biggs or Mr. McClintock, Mr. Tiffany, or Mr. Massey, anyone. Anyone else like to join Mr. Gaetz? And anyone like to express their support for Mr. Gaetz's effort to abolish an entire federal law enforcement agency? Anyone over there?
They're not having much success. And you know, the tragedy is, though, there are real problems that we should be addressing. While I think we are on the Democratic side of the aisle doing a good job of exposing these kind of frivolous efforts by the GOP and not so frivolous efforts like an effort to interfere in a prosecution, which they have no right to do. But it comes at a great opportunity cost because we could be trying to solve some of the nation's problems. But instead they want to engage in these kind of tactics meant to placate the most extreme members of their MAGA world.
Well, that, in fact, was my next question for you. I mean, I haven't seen any yet. Does Kevin McCarthy, does the Republican caucus, now that they're in control, have any agenda? I mean, do they stand for anything? Do they want to do anything?
You know, I would say writ large, McCarthy doesn't have much of an agenda beyond keeping his speakership, and he's willing to sacrifice everything else in the service of that agenda. It's why, you know, the debt ceiling has been so problematic. But beyond that, you know, there are things that get done, you know, that are bipartisan nature. They don't tend to get as much attention because they're not, the most consequential. But to give you, you know, an example, I'm working with a Republican on an effort to use Russian seized assets to help support humanitarian and military efforts in Ukraine, to help Ukrainian efforts. We have frozen a bunch of Russian assets, and those could be transferred to Ukraine. And things like that can be bipartisan, are bipartisan. But in terms of an overall agenda by Republicans, it's mostly targeting their Fox-watching base. Things they know will never pass in the Senate, will never become law, and then a bunch of frivolous oversight or investigations masquerading as oversight.
Yeah, and we've seen almost no end of those. Well, I thought of you the other day, Congressman, when I read in the Associated Press just a couple of days ago that the public trust in the Supreme Court of the United States is the lowest it's been in 50 years. I know this has been an issue you've talked a lot about and are taking some trying to take some action on. Should we be concerned about people having no trust or confidence in the Supreme Court of the United States?
We should, and frankly, we should be even more concerned about why people have no confidence and trust in the Supreme Court. And it's because the court has been packed, and it is now the least represented body in the country. Mitch McConnell successfully packed the court when he withheld an appointment from Barack Obama from even getting a hearing, and in the most hypocritical fashion, jammed another justice down the country's throat while people were literally voting for Joe Biden. And the result is a Supreme Court that is no longer a conservative court that would have some respect for precedent, but a partisan and reactionary court. And this is why the court lacks public confidence. It is deeply out of step with where Americans are coming from. It was packed ideologically to achieve a reactionary social agenda. It is obviously pushing an agenda that includes the repeal of women's reproductive freedom. And that may be just the first right to fall. So there are remedies for this, and I've been championing expansion of the court, court of ethics for the court, term limits for the court. The most important is expansion, because that would allow us to unstack the court.
Do you have a number in mind, or is there any ideal number? And, you know, there are even some progressives who say, yeah, well, if we stack the court, if we put more people on the court, they'll just stack it more against us. What's your response to that?
You know, my response to it is they've packed the court, and we can either decide to grin and bear it and sentence an entire generation of Americans, including my kids, to an adulthood in which they have to live under this reactionary court, or we can do something about it. Yes, there's a risk that they could always expand the court too. But frankly, they've already done it. They've already packed the court.
Right.
And we're continually put in this position where if we seek to restore balance to something, it sets up a precedent that they could abuse. And just for a very recent example, we moved to try to expel this, you know, serial fabricator, George Santos. And now they want to use that precedent to try to expel me, because I'm, you know, public enemy number one for the MAGA crowd. I impeached, mm-hmm. Led the first impeachment of Trump, and participated in the January 6th hearings to hold him accountable. And so they will use the precedent of trying to get rid of George Santos to try to expel someone they consider to be, you know, one of the MAGA world's foremost adversaries. But you know, we need to continue doing the right thing, even if they use the precedent for the wrong thing.
Should the court adopt its a binding code of ethics? And if not, should the Congress act?
Absolutely. The court should. If they don't, we should. And, you know, the challenge, of course, is that the question of whether we can impose a code of ethics on the Supreme Court would ultimately be adjudicated by the Supreme Court. So it's the fox that's guarding the hen house. But you know, my feeling is that it would be constitutional, and we should enact it. And if they're going to try to strike down a form of accountability, they're going to have a hard time defending it. It will also give only, I think, further impetus to limit the terms of justices, as well as expand the size of the court to restore its balance. But whatever the Supreme Court may rule on it, I think we have an independent responsibility in Congress to do what we can to restore ethics on that court, and we should.
We have seen some pretty stunning, shocking information about gifts that Justice Clarence Thomas received from developer Harlan Crow, the super yachts, the private jets, the luxury resorts, buying his mother's house, paying his godson or great nephews, I guess, tuition. Does that merit impeachment, Congressman?
You know, I think impeachment, and obviously I have a lot of experience with this remedy. In fact, well before Trump's impeachment, impeachments, plural, I led an impeachment. I was lead manager in impeachment of a corrupt federal judge named Thomas Porteous, who was convicted. And he was convicted in part, in one article, for lying to Congress during his confirmation, something that many have cited as a precedent for justices who lied about respecting the precedent of Roe v. Wade. But I think, frankly, a more practical option than impeachment is expansion of the court. I think, for one thing, we could expand the court with a majority vote if we can get past the filibuster. We don't need two-thirds of the court as we would in an impeachment. So I think expansion is a more viable way of dealing with that. And I also think term limits would deal effectively with that problem of Clarence Thomas. And so those, to me, are the more viable remedies.
And you've just recently introduced the Justice is Blind Act. which deals with, as I understand it, stock trading on the part of justices, Congressman.
Yeah, you know, I'm continuing to be concerned about justices who are putting their financial interests ahead of the public interest. Obviously, we see it in different forms with Clarence Thomas and these, you know, sort of hidden beneficiaries providing luxury travel. And you see it potentially with other justices in which family members have made a lucrative living working with people who have business before the court. But also begs the question about whether in other respects, including their stock portfolios, this may be influencing their court decisions, because obviously their court decisions have a big impact on the fortunes of different companies and interests. So my bill would essentially force justices to put their stock in a blind trust or not, or ban trading. I think we should do the same with members of Congress, given the abuses that we've seen.
Right. And that bill has just been introduced, right? There's no movement on it yet, so far as I know. Right. Well, there are a few other things that are occupying your time these days, Congressman, in addition to your work on behalf of the people of California, in fact, the entire country in the United States Congress. We're going to take a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod. And when we come back, I want to ask you how that big Senate race is going, plus a couple of other issues. In today's podcast with Congressman Adam Schiff, brought to you by the Iron Workers Union, the good men and women of the Iron Workers under President Eric Dean. You know, think of all the iconic structures in this land of ours, most of them the work of the great iron workers, the Golden Gate Bridge, the big Memorial Arch in St. Louis, the New World, One World Trade Center, and that new bridge being built between Kentucky and Ohio. All thanks to the iron workers. They say the sky's the limit, and they mean it. Check out their website, ironworkers.org, and we send a big thank you to all the members of the iron workers for their great work building America and for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back on today's podcast. Honored to be joined by Congressman Adam Schiff, representing the Burbank, West Hollywood area in California, and of course, the first impeachment manager for the first impeachment of Donald Trump. So, Congressman, I saw the other day you gave a commencement address where you warned the graduates that democracy is in peril, and it's basically up to them to save it. Are you really concerned that our democracy is on the line?
I'm desperately concerned about it, and it has been in jeopardy now for some years. And, you know, with, you know, Trump's return to the scene, and if the election were held today, he would most likely be their nominee. Our democracy is once again on very fragile ground. We have seen during the 4 years of his presidency, things go from bad to worse, and the end point was insurrection. That would be the beginning point of any new term by Donald Trump. But even in the absence of that, we continue to see a Republican Party in Congress that is essentially kind of a cult of personality more than a party of ideology, a cult in which, you know, a conservative like Liz Cheney has no place anymore. And why? Because she was unwilling to tell a big lie about our elections, a big lie that undermined the foundation of our democracy. And you still have Republicans out pushing these big lies. And you have other Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, advancing voter disenfranchisement efforts. This is their political business model. They know their policies are backward and unpopular. And the only way they can gain power or hold power is if they make it increasingly difficult for people to vote. And once you, you know, tear down that foundation of voting, then the whole edifice is at risk. So I am deeply concerned with where we are as a democracy.
And the solutions that you see, other than electing more Democrats, I guess I would add, particularly at the state level where a lot of these changes are taking place, what can we do about it? And particularly, I guess, important in 2024, correct?
Yes. I mean, we're going to have to overcome, first of all of these voter disenfranchisement efforts to take back the House, to win the presidency once again, to hold on to the Senate. If we're successful in doing that, then we need to make voting rights the very first thing that we do. Do away with the gerrymander in the House. Do away with all these laws around the country meant to disenfranchise people. That really ought to be the first order of business. It was something, frankly, I was arguing should have been the first order of business when Joe Biden became president and we controlled both houses. But I will also say that I think a big part of the reason why our democracy is at risk, and this is a central focus of mine, is that the economy is simply not working for millions of people. And this was really at the heart of my message to the UC law graduates in San Francisco. And that is, the problem is not that people aren't working. The problem is that they are working, and they're still not making enough to get by. And I think when people see the quality of their life at risk and the future for their kids in doubt, they start to be receptive to a demagogue like Trump who promises that he alone can fix things. So we need to address the unaffordability of housing. We need to address the scourge of homelessness. We need to make sure people can afford quality health care, that they have a good retirement, a secure and dignified retirement. These are all things that are essential for an economy that works for everyone, but also central to preserving our democracy.
Right. Otherwise, people get the feeling that they're basically just running in place and not getting anywhere, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I was on the picket lines recently with the writers, and you know, changes in technology are going to aggravate this, like AI, if we don't do something about it. I was on the picket line a month earlier for the LA Unified School Workers. These were bus drivers and cafeteria workers and nurses' aides. They were being paid $25,000 a year. You can't pay people $25,000 a year and expect that they're going to be able to find a home. And if we don't want people to be homeless, we have to pay them a livable wage, something that they can provide for themselves and their family. And these economic challenges, I just think, are part and parcel of our overall challenge to our democracy.
So, Congressman, you have taken a big step. You were the first member of Congress. There are now two others who have declared your candidacy for the United States Senate from California to replace Senator Dianne Feinstein. It wouldn't be, I wouldn't feel right having you on the podcast and not giving you a chance to tell us, and most of our listeners are probably from California, why Adam Schiff?
Well, and thank you. I'm delighted to be on and to have a chance to talk to you about the Senate campaign. Look, we've got three great progressives who are running on the Democratic side. I think what distinguishes me, and this is, I think, why Nancy Pelosi is supporting me and more than half of the California Democratic delegation, is that I have a very strong record of getting things done for California, of delivering. And in my view, you can't be progressive unless you make progress. So I've been, you know, I've been pivotal to delivering light rail systems and to building out an early earthquake warning system, to delivering up-to-date textbooks in our schools and a patient bill of rights, to delivering legislation to protect press freedom and to attack nuclear nonproliferation. I brought millions and millions of dollars back to California to help house the unhoused, to help address the fentanyl crisis and to support community-based policing. And this is what I want to do in the Senate, which is meet the needs of people up and down the state, work with people to get things done. But I also think that I've distinguished myself among my colleagues in being at the center of the fight to protect our democracy. And I'm very proud of the role that I played, even though it's made me a big target on the right. I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. And given where the country is, I think we're still deeply at risk, and we still maybe more than ever need a champion of our democracy in the Senate.
The primary is in June 2024.
In March.
I'm sorry. That's right. We moved it up. I should know that, right? Yeah. The general, correct me if I'm wrong, in November 2024.
Yeah.
That's some 18 months away. Congressman, should Senator Feinstein stay where she is, or should she step down?
You know, I think that that will be a decision that she will need to make based on her health. I'm glad that she is recovering, and glad she's back at work. I'm glad she's confirming judges, and she'll have to make that decision. I'm glad both because she's a longtime friend and colleague. She and I have worked together very closely over the years. Diane is the head Democrat on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, and I had the same role in the House. But we've also worked on bringing back millions for California, protecting open space, attacking the wildfire threat facing California. So I'm just glad she's back. I will say this. I am deeply concerned if she wasn't back, that the Republicans will never appoint someone to the Judiciary Committee to fill her seat. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that she's back and able to confirm judges, because that may be the only way we can get judges put on the bench, is if she's there. But ultimately, she'll need to decide. I'm grateful she's on the path of recovery.
So I just want to ask you one final question. You are very busy looking at 2024. Aside from your own race, Congressman, you look at the presidential contest for 2024. You mentioned just a few minutes ago, it looks to you like were the votes held today, Donald Trump would be the Republican nominee, correct?
Yes. Yes. Tragically. And I do want to say this. I think we have a both pivotal opportunity and responsibility next year in the presidential race to move the country in a new direction, to move it away from this flirtation with authoritarianism. The Republicans have made it clear they won't drop Trump or Trumpism because he's a liar. They're okay with that. They won't drop him because he's immoral and unethical. They're fine with that, too. I'm convinced they won't even drop him if he's a convicted felon. But if they decide that he's a loser, if we beat them again in election after election, and they decide that he's a loser, and as long as they stick with him, they'll be losers, then and maybe only then will they decide to move on, that this whole experiment and Trumpism was just a colossal nightmare for the country and a disaster for their own party.
You and I can remember, Congressman, a day when someone who was even accused of sexual assault or rape would not be considered as a candidate for any office, right? How times have changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is an astonishment to me that he is considered a candidate for dog catcher after leading an insurrection, being adjudicated a sexual assault perpetrator, making, you know, hush money payments to a porn star literally while he was in the Oval Office, extorting Ukraine with withholding military aid to get them to help him cheat in the election, twice impeached. I mean, it's amazing that he's considered viable for anything.
Do you have any concerns about President Biden running for re-election and his ability to do the job at the young age of 81?
You know, the interactions I've had with the president, and I've had many, I have great confidence in his ability to do the job. And considering the track record of the last 2 years, which is one of the most successful in a generation, he's proved he's more than capable of doing the job. And so I'm fully behind him. And I also think if it should come to another race with Donald Trump as their nominee, that Joe Biden is a very good matchup for us. And so I feel good about his candidacy.
Well, Congressman, it's good to have you back on the Bill Press Pod. Thank you for all your good work. Good luck with your new effort in the Senate race, and we'll stay in touch with you as that develops even further. And talk again soon. Thanks, yeah. Congressman.
Great to talk with you, and Bill, thank you so much for your past leadership of our party and your current leadership as an advocate.
You and I, good team. Thanks, Congressman.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's podcast with Congressman Adam Schiff. And we'll be back on Friday with our roundtable. Will the deal worked out between Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden actually get past Congress? Will there be any more Republican candidates jumping into the 2024 primary? That and all the other news from Washington we'll be tackling with three political reporters on this week's roundtable on Friday. So have a great week, everybody. Come back and see us on Friday for our roundtable and the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.